previously on the What's in Your Head podcast.
If I go get soda, I usually go for a Coke.
Okay.
I'm for from some the reason, South. Everything is Coke.
That is so true. We'll get to that in a second. For some reason, I thought you were one of these Pepsi pussies. No, by the way, I don't know if you guys probably heard, Dr. Pepper has surpassed Pepsi.
Number two now.
Yeah, because Pepsi tastes like fucking stale Coke. Only Pepsi product I drink is Mountain Dew, which Mountain Dew needs to do what we want to do with California and break off. but yes, to Mike's point, I remember growing up in Kentucky, especially 1980. You come to my house, my cousin's house. Hey, Mike, you want a Coke? You say yes. You say, what kind? What do you have? Mountain Dew, Mellow Yellow, fucking orange. Yeah,
crust. It didn't.
Soda was Coke.
Yep.
You had Coke, and then you had all the subcategories, whether it's Mountain Dew, Dr. Pepper, Coke, Cherry Coke, Orange Crush. Everything was Coke.
Growing up in the Northwest, I had a completely different experience.
Was it soda?
Everything soda out pop. There was a pop.
Yep.
Yeah.
Kentucky, it was Coke. Ohio was pop. And then I know some people from the Northeast called it soda or soda pop. Download and listen to the What's in Your Head podcast at whatsinyourhead.com, d-410.com, Spotify, Apple Podcast, and wherever fine podcasts are found.
Digital 410 Media proudly presents the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast with your hosts, Don Abernathy, Jeff Copsetta, and Dennis Blocker.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the What's the Scuttlebutt podcast, your favorite World War II-based podcast. Joining us, as always, is, well, not Dennis. Dennis will be here. He's dealing with the Texas environment. Jeff is back from lands far, far away, and he's going to give us the whole rundown on his trip to Greece, but we're going to hold off on that for a little bit. In an effort to get Dennis here so he can help participate in that conversation. And so I wanted to show off a few things. So Jeff, when you were still overseas, Dennis and I were trying to, we were figuring out, what do we want to do for our D-Day podcast episode? You know, I've done in-depth storytelling on the operation, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago, and there's a lot of World War II podcasts. We're going to have relatively the same content, you know, talking about all the going-ons and all the cool stuff. And unfortunately, we're not based over across the ocean like some podcasts are, who have the ability to do some frontline content. And so we said, hey, why don't we just do 20 minutes of get caught up on things, and then I will edit in interviews that I did with vets who were there. Let the D-Day story be told through the words of the vets who were at D-Day. And so we're like, great, cool. So we did that. And I went back and I edited some content from Papa Jake Larson, who was there on D-Day, and a pilot, a B-17 pilot, who participated up before and up to and after. His name was Keith Anderson. And in the interview, I don't even remember this because it was 2019 I did the interview. I asked him, I said, do you remember the name of your plane? He said, yeah, well, we only named one plane. After the one plane, we've had many other planes. We didn't have a name on it. But this one particular plane we named after, I think, is the gunner and his crew. His ex-girlfriend, who hurt his feelings, his name was Annie. And as a way to get back to Annie, I guess they referred to her as Anytime Annie, meaning she was ready to go at any time. So they named their plane Anytime Annie. And he was talking about how at the time the Air Corps was getting all this new modern technology. And so what was happening were a lot of the older planes were getting sent back for refit and getting some of the new radar systems, the new sonars, new radio equipment. And so I think they only had Anytime Annie for a short period of time. She got sent back for retrofitting and got some new equipment and then issued to another crew. And then sadly that crew got shot down, and that was the end for Anytime Annie. Well, as I'm editing this and getting it ready to put into the final format, I said, well, I do what I do a lot of times. I get on Google, type in Anytime Annie, and I see two posts. One of it was this very cool website out of Germany that actually has the name of some bombers that they found records for and the manufacturing dates and what plant they came out of, but there wasn't any real photos. It had like some generic photos of some B-17s. And then I see this eBay auction. It's a photo of a gentleman like on a scaffolding. He's got his hand on his chin and he's looking at this pinup art, fully topless, and it says above it, Anytime Annie. And this photo was for sale, so I bought it. And here's the photo. And I thought, well, how cool is that to have the photo, one of the only few photos I ever found of this plane, that the gentleman we interviewed on our podcast was part of the ceremony of naming it. Now, this isn't the end-all, be-all photo. Clearly, this guy has negatives, and he's just printing new ones. And I got to think about it. I was like, well, Keith Anderson was recommended to me by someone in the local Florida World War II reenacting community. It was his girlfriend's grandfather. And sadly, he passed away, I don't know, 5 or 6 months after the interview. So I've since gone on eBay and bought a second one, and I want to give it to them so that they could have a picture of the plane, not only that their grandfather flew on, but that his cohort's named after the ex-girlfriend of their gunner. So I just thought that was kind of cool to have here in the podcast. Kind of a small world type thing, you know? And the fact that not only did I find a picture on Google, but I found one that's a high-quality reprint off of the original negative. So I was excited about that. And then the other thing I want to get caught up on real quick, just because of D-Day, if you guys remember, I think back in February, March, I found that virtual race. It was the to commemorate the 80th anniversary of D-Day. You downloaded the app, you went out and you had to run 80 miles. Obviously not all at one jaunt. You could choose how quickly or how slowly you ran. The cutoff time was going to be June 6th. I think I got it done in like a month and a half. And the cool thing is you would run, you would track it with a running app, and then you would upload your progress, proving that you made the run. And the cool thing is when you uploaded your miles, it showed you the D-Day invasion map, and it kind of puts you as if you landed. And so if you did 15 miles or 5 miles that day, it showed you on that route, but then it had little checkpoints, like Pointe du Hoc or St. Mary Dumont, some of the gun placements, and give you a little history. And it was kind of cool, especially if you weren't into this history as much as we are. You could potentially learn some pretty cool stuff. And then you upload your stuff, and then I think June 1st rolled around and they started mailing out medals. Now, I have a lot of running medals, but this is the only one I've ever had. It's got the Normandy beaches. It says D-Day, 80 miles on it. Has a Mustang on there. So with all my running medals from my physical running races, I can now have a World War II themed one that helps commemorate and kind of educates people through fitness, which some could argue we probably could use a lot more of that these days. But other than that, things have been getting a lot of rain down here, but I'm excited to hear about your trip.
Yeah, well, first, I mean, I think that's pretty cool that you found that photograph of Anytime Annie. I mean, I think a lot of people, you know, when they talk to B-17 crew, I'm like, oh, what was the name of your plane? And I think it's surprising for a lot of people to know that they weren't always in that same airplane, right? I mean, when you dig through and you look at the actual real story of the Memphis Belle, it just kind of gets muddled in who was flying what and, you know, who gets credit for what mission and all that, you know, and... So I think it's great with all of the new craze about the 8th Air Force, especially with what we've got in cinema now, for people to kind of do a little bit more research on that. So I think that's really great you found that. And on your virtual run, I think that's another really cool thing too, because, you know, World War II, boy, it's 80 years ago now, and we've got to find new and fun ways to keep it going. You can only read so many books. There's only so many movies. We got the video games. Okay, like let's figure out a way to still educate people that may not be their niche, right? But it figured out a way to kind of, you know, open that pathway to history in a creative way. So I think it's really great that you got to do that.
And they did it in a sensitive way. It wasn't like all glamorized or, you know, anything you could deem somewhat offensive or opposite of what the intent, you know, the fact that D-Day was coming up. So it was pretty cool. Right. And I think you mentioned in past podcasts that if you watch the Hollywood mainstream version of Memphis Belle from like 1985, 88, 89, or 91, whatever year it was.
90, yeah.
That the characters depicted in that movie weren't based on any of the characters that, well, characters... end quote, any of the servicemen actually served on there. And as a young man, you're talking to the pilot, and I guess he kind of expressed to you that the goal of that movie was to tell the story of all Air Corpsmen and not us as individuals. We didn't want to be glamorized. Yeah, they used the name of our plane and our mission hardships, but we weren't overly concerned with them portraying us as we were, or even use their names for that matter.
Yeah. Yeah, which I think was really neat. I mean, yeah, that's a that's a whole nother, we could do a whole episode just on that. But yeah, I thought that was really neat that they didn't center it on